think I'm just throwing off a lot now. Tomorrow won't be when I need them.
Actually, putting the SBM logs there away.
I'm gonna grab, I've got yours.
Yeah, sure.
So I've got a few slides and we can spend as much time as we need to here. If you'll send them to me later, I'll bundle up everybody's slides and distribute them to you. Looks like I'm going to have some stuff cut off here. Okay, good. That was working. Okay, so we could spend some time talking about the architecture, but I'm not going to do that except to say that there are three interfaces, but one of them we've mostly been ignoring so far, which is the management interface. But we have an interface that has sort of the obvious operations. You stick stuff in a registry, you update it, you delete it, and you can resolve. So there's a registry of information about everything, the system, slices, users, authorities, and so on. One special call is you can get back credentials, which is basically saying, based on everything I know, I'm willing to sign that you have the rights to do the following. Now, there's some policy embedded in that, which we can argue about, but I just wanted to make sure everyone had this terminology in their head. And that there's a slice interface that, amongst other things, lets you do what you need to get the resources to create a slice, and then lets you come back and control the slice, and then it allows you to ask some informational questions about what slices are supported, what resources have been assigned to them. This one's like immature, so I'm not going to talk about that one too much. Now, I wanted to be very careful because I'm going to be talking about interfaces and modules and classes and yada yada yada. So there are a set of interfaces. They've been defined with prose, with pseudocode in the SFA document. What we have been doing is codifying those interfaces in a particular implementation. That implementation is the Genie Router module. You go to this website and scroll down a little bit, you'll see reference to Federation, which is broadly the Planet Federation, not narrowly Genie Federation, broadly what we're doing, and a pointer to a wiki page that will get you to the source code and some documentation. Right now, the only interesting documentation is the SFA document, a second document that tells you how we realize the SFA in our implementation, and a pointer to a wiki page that has a bunch of information about the Eclipse modeling framework, which I'll come back to. The other relevant stuff that you'll find here is it's primarily about the MyPLC distribution and all the developers contributing to PlanetLab. I'm not going to talk a lot about MyPLC. It is something that many of you are working with. It lets you set up your own PLC and then start connecting nodes to it and managing those nodes. So I'll talk about how that interfaces. If you have questions, I may or may not be able to help you on why did this break in terms of MyPLC. But the idea is that whereas we have the quote-unquote public PlanetLab, you can build your private PlanetLab with your control node and whatever nodes you want to plug in. There's also developers mailing lists I've pointed people to that you get to by visiting here. I would strongly encourage you, if you haven't already, to join the developers mailing list. You're going to see stuff that's much broader than Genie Wrapper, although I suspect it's going to be dominated by Genie Wrapper in the near future. I've been asked for a particular pointer for Genie Wrapper, and so I put Tony's name here. If you need the attention of a single person, Tony is probably the right one. All right, so Genie Wrapper is a big pile of Python code. And I wanted to just give you a sense of it. We can go through the code if you have specific questions. But basically, we needed to build up a set of classes that implemented everything about the security architecture of the SFA. And we started with OpenSSL. And it has an X509 library program. on top of which we built a certificate class, on top of which we were then able to build the Genie identifiers, credentials, and tickets. And these are all terms defined in the architecture. And to a first approximation, you look in the architecture document and you see, oh, a credential has this, 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 and this, and they very, very closely match the implementation of what a credential is here. So you have to say, who is the caller, what's the GID of the caller, what object are they operating on, what set of rights do they have, all signed, and then signed by parents and so on. The GID has a UUID embedded in it, it has a hierarchical name embedded in it, and so on. So it's very, these implementations are very close to the pseudocode. The ticket is a little bit funny, and now I can't remember the detail of what was different, but if you press me on it, I'll go back and try to remind myself of what it was. But there's some problems in the ticket representation, because we wanted to carry in the ticket every ounce of state we would need to instantiate a slice. So it wasn't just, here's the RSpec for the slice that I want, but it had the keys for the users that were supposed to be able to log into that slice embedded in there as well. So we have come to this realization, well, we realized that we just were forced to decide on an answer. To create a slice, you need an RSpec, which is information about all the resources, but there's other state that you need. And, well, you can pretend those other states were resources and stick them in the RSpec, but the reality of the implementation is that they're pulled out, and primarily there are two fields there. You can think of this as the state you need to initialize a slice. You need the keys for the users that will log into the slice, and you need what we call an init script, which is a piece of code to run when the slice is booted up. And so those got buried in here, and that's not really quite exactly the way it's described in the architecture, that's the way we did here. All right, so there is a util directory, and you can go look at the file, and you'll see the classes, and you know it's pretty straightforward to follow that code, and you'll see it's built on this, which is built on this. Okay, so the other big piece of it is we're doing remote calls on various objects, and so we just started with XML RPCLib. And you will see a class that handles the client side and the server side. There is a specialization of the Genie server to implement the four main building blocks of the architecture. These are the class names. This isn't 100% consistent with what you might, the architecture document would call it. Maybe instead of aggregate, we should have called this aggregate manager. Registry. Maybe instead of component, we should have called it component manager. But basically, these are the abstractions defined in the SFA. I don't say it here, but let me just remind you that the aggregate exports the slice interface from the previous slide. Slice manager, our implementation supports exactly the slice interface. The component manager, the component class, exports the slice interface. So these three all export the same interface. There are some caveats I'll talk about in a minute. The registry exports, obviously, the registry interface. Over on this side, we have built a variety of little test programs, and there's a lot of work that could be done here, but this isn't a class, so this is slightly out of place. This is a Unix program that takes command line arguments and makes the appropriate call on the client side to cause whatever action over here to take happen. And this is what I'll demo for you in a little bit.
Can I have a question? So in looking over the PlanetLab SFA implementation document, you mentioned some client-side code that helps implement the slice manager. This Genie client SFA
So it's the term slice manager, exactly how we use it. The thing that's implemented here, we actually bounce back and forth between calling it a slice manager and an aggregator of aggregates. It is the thing that knows about a set of aggregates and gives you some view of the world. In our implementation, it exports exactly the slice interface, nothing more. And the bells and whistles that pretty that up for a user get pushed off to the client side. So this will give you a little bit prettier. And then there's a set of other helper functions I'll talk about that work in conjunction with that.
But do they talk directly to the slice manager, or do they talk to the aggregate manager?
the slice manager in the common case.
Okay.
And in fact, some of these, well, I'll explain the helper. I've got another graph that'll show who's exactly. These are the class hierarchies.
Okay.
These are not the invocation chains. And by the way, these aren't on top of each other. This is a set all on top of here. These are four independent things. They're otherwise nothing, very little, if any, common code to them. All right, there's three other classes I just want to mention. And these, let me talk about them. Rights, you'll find a rights.py file. It basically codifies the architecture section 5.4. If you look at 5.4, what you'll see is a table that says who gets what rights. If you're a PI, you get to do this. If you're a common user, you get to do that. Of all the calls that you can make over here, these are how the rights are sliced up, so to speak. Now, we centralized that, and so if the policies were to change, there's a very straightforward place to go make the change here. There's actually a function in here that for every time a call comes in off the network, the very first thing you do is you say, do you have the appropriate rights? And it basically looks in the credential and says here he has rights X, and then it goes and compares that against the table and says, okay, you can do it or you can't do it.
So those checks are done solely against things that it receives in the certificate. It doesn't look at the, it's not looking at any rights in its local register.
Right, right. It is entirely based upon what it finds in the credential.
So do you have the ability to have a component manager have a localized policy?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the right to invoke update my slice doesn't mean I have to say yes to everything you ask for in the RSpec. There is additional resource allocation policy that's not captured by the credential. Credential says you have the right to call this function. There's an argument in there that I will go off and perhaps impose some other policy on. So in particular, if you call the aggregate manager's create slice call and you give an RSpec that was just way out of line, I you have the right to make the call, but I don't have to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
So in our implementation, the policy check as to whether you will get to have, I will satisfy your request by based upon what you put in the RSpec happens here, not here. That's a plan on engineering decision that resource allocation policy got centralized. There's still enforcement here, but the yes or no to a request for a particular RSpec happened up here.
How does revocation work? Somebody got a certificate, but now they've been thrown out of school.
We do not, we rely today on the certificate or the credential timeout. We do not, this is maybe is related to Rob's question. At the moment, this could change. At the moment, we do not go back and ask the registry, by the way, was this revoked since this credential was signed? That's an option if we don't do that right now. There are two complicated data structures here. One is the RSpec and the other is the registry record. Today we've sort of implemented the registry record by hand, and we just because it was working, we didn't go back and change it. What we're going to do is eventually the same thing that we're doing today with the RSpec, which is the RSpec is generated from an EMF schema. So we have a convenient interface, except it's not so convenient to get Eclipse running and all the right plugins. We have a nice high level modeling framework that's designed to model this kind of thing, and we use it to generate the code that runs throughout here to manipulate the RSpec, to parse it and extract the stuff you needed out of it. So when you come into a slice manager, you're given an RSpec, and you have to pull it apart and say, okay, this piece of the RSpec I need to pass onto this aggregate, and this other piece of the RSpec I need to pass onto that aggregate. When you get to the aggregate, you may pull it apart again. So it's a nested structure. I've got a picture in a second. The point I wanted to make simply, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, is we're starting with a high-level description of the RSpec from which we derive the code that runs in here, turns it into the appropriate Python dictionaries. And we're going to do that here. We just didn't go back and change that. And that's the class hierarchy. I have no idea why that's unreadable there, but. This is a snapshot, and this is actually now a little bit old, just to give you a sense of what the RSpec looks like. And I've actually taken some stuff out of it just to get it on, fit on one slide, but it gives you the sense. And it's important to us that we have something that's general purpose, but that it is easy to map these simpler things we're doing today in PlanetLab onto this. And so I didn't want PlanetLab to blow up on us because we were trying to do something general purpose here. So an RSpec is a set of networks, one or more the notation is one or more, zero or more. It's the notation of EMF kind of translated into text here. An RSpec is a set of one or more network specs. A network spec is what a particular aggregate is likely to interpret. A net spec has one or more node specs and zero or more link specs. In PlanetLab, it might have a bunch of node specs, but no link specs because we sort of take we don't explicitly configure links, we just use the internet. We're on an Ethernet, global interconnect. If you were in Vini, you might have a set of node specs, one for each node, and then the specs for all the links. The link specs over here, and you can't quite read it. In PlanetLab, it could very well be the case that there is exactly one node spec. And when you get to the node spec, you actually have the opportunity to say, these specs here don't apply to just one node, but to these 500 nodes. So I don't have to have 500 node specs unless I have 500 different node configurations. If I have one node configuration, which is the standard case in PlanetLab, I have one node spec, but that node spec, if you cracked open the XML, this is where you ought to find a whole bunch of identical nodes.
It seems that that's nice for something like for the PlanetLab case where you have no links. But I would assume that you might run into trouble here.
Then you use it the other way. You have a node spec per node.
Okay. Yeah.
So this was only a way to get PlanetLab in here without this thing. I didn't want to have a node spec repeating all of this information for every node when they were identical for all 500 nodes. And even in PlanetLab, there might be two classes of nodes. There might be the class of node with one node spec, where I get lots and lots of capacity because they're my friend's sites. And another node spec for everywhere else where I get less capacity, and then so I could still do that. This would.
And well, presumably you want, even today in PlanetLab, you want something that says like
concrete description of the node. It's not characteristics of the node I might want to look at to choose which nodes I want. There's a parallel mechanism where I can inspect the nodes and ask it other questions, basically learn a richer set of information. Like what is your current load, where are you located, and so on. But this is where I would speak to the node to actually ask for an allocation. So there's a distinction between every last property of a node and those things I would say to it when I wanted to allocate something on the node. And then when you get down to the nuts and bolts, I'm actually lifting out the PlanetLab attributes that we use. So I wanted to make this as concrete as possible. On the link side, it's a little more speculative, but this is what... There are cases where we do specify bandwidth and so on for an outgoing interface, and so it seems like it's right. This is what we think will work for Vini as well. Mm-hmm. But my list there it is. The only other thing I wanted to say right now is nodes can have a set of interfaces, and links can have a set of endpoints, both of type if spec, and this describes that connection point. It has an address, it has a type, Ethernet, XYZ address, and I can specify rates. So even if I don't have links, I'm on PlanetLab, I can still have a node spec that has an interface spec, and I can give you the interface spec, and that's basically controlling some restriction on how much bandwidth you get out of this box in a PlanetLab setting. But when you do have links, there will eventually be a pairing up of the interface that the node sees and the endpoint of the link sees. So I don't want to belabor this, but just to give you a sense of what's going into the...
Larry, this comparison has been very interesting because show us how you have been moving from PlanetLab toward the GeniWrapper. Can you go back to the other slides and show the same process for those classes, hierarchical classes? Are those also in PlanetLab? What is new here?
everything, let me go to the next slide, because everything that I can do using the Genie Wrapper interface, we do a variant of that with the current interfaces, except it's not as general purpose, it's not as secure, and there's it doesn't scale as well as we bring in new federated partners. Okay. So everything that I'm going to describe, we do a variant of it, but it's just not. So yeah, I could try to draw out some examples, but.
So somehow you are saying that you have modified each of the module, or almost many of the module of the plan.
I don't say that we modified it. The way I would describe it is we came to the conclusion, actually it goes all the way back to here. This was informed by, if we look at what we've got in PLC, we really do have a registry of information, and we do get some right. So this actually happened quite before Gene came along. We started to say, now that we've built one of these, it's really got, you know, this subpiece and that subpiece, and those ultimately got crystallized in pieces of the architecture. So that architecture doesn't come from the vacuum. It's informed by Planet Lab and any lab for that matter.
So, sorry. One question I have on your RSpec, and maybe this is part of the glitch, but I don't see an identifier for links. And I bring this up because this is one of the things that we run into and have come to the conclusion that if you're gonna have to split up these RSpecs to go out and talk to a bunch of backend component managers, right? You need to be able to say, to basically be able to take a link and just and talk about it in RSpecs that are potentially going to do different component managers.
One quick suggestion, the final RSpec definition, right? So it has a lot of things, fields are missing that we would like to have. It has a number of things that wouldn't make sense in the context of what we're doing. I could imagine it's a common problem, basically. So I think the RSpec is still to some extent a moving target. I would almost suggest moving it at the end of the discussion, because I think this is sort of the very...
This is exactly right. In fact, what I didn't say here is that we have now started to specialize this. So the intent is that this is, well, first of all, just a first cut. It's a moving target. But second, it will then be specialized. You'll do a programmable router, and it will specialize in a router spec, will specialize node spec. And I think you're right. So in the link spec case, we don't have tangible, concrete experience yet. This was, of all of our attributes, this is the ones we thought we needed. So we reposted that set.
Can I ask one? So I think you said that have one or more nodes, zero or more links, right?
Yeah.
But if you're talking about specifying a network,
but if the network is on the internet, you don't have to specify the links. That is Planet Lab.
Okay, but if I'm talking about a network, do I always have to have a node? Because I don't.
In my definition, yeah. Yeah. All right. So you could argue there were zero nodes. It was the null network, but possibly.
Okay, that was the only. Okay.
Yeah, and the RSpec is a rat hole. It absolutely is a rat hole. For helping you understand the code, what I wanted you to understand is that I think the right way to go is to get the RSpec up there in a high-level language so that we can all reason about it and generate the code, because that's a piece that I don't want to have to dig through the code. All right, so now let me walk through some configurations of those classes as they get instantiated into running code.
Running. Just a few questions about that with the RSpec going forward. putting something on the table seems like a great place, I mean, a necessary place to start. How do you see this, sort of the discussion and the RSpec itself evolving over time? Is it something which there's going to be attention to in keeping it focused and elegant and simple enough for people to understand, and it's becoming a kitchen sink. Right?
Yeah.
And it's going to have a tendency to be a kitchen sink. Right?
Yep.
Over time. Any thoughts on how that...
The only thoughts I have is, one, at some point very soon we need to form our first standards committee. This has to be standardized in some way. Second, I think this, the the strategy for that committee is trying to identify commonality and move it into the core, and then subclass, then specialize it. I mean, there will be a lot of specialization. As the first time I bring up my note, it will be, most of its interesting features will be in the specialized thing, and I can do that completely independently of what you did. And then, after I've experienced with that, I bring it back to the standardization process, and we discover six of us had something similar, and we try to fight it back in core.
Yeah.
And very, very much related to that, it just gets to the rat hole. You don't get to come back to the standardization body and say, this moves to the core, until you have it demonstrated. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way this goes rat hole so fast is, well, what if?
Yes, right. Right.
And, yeah. All right. So, this is a single PLC, and I am now instantiating some servers, basically. I'm only showing the backends, I'm not showing the clients here. So imagine SFI running somewhere else. On the node that hosts PLC, which has an interface called the PLC API, we start up three different servers. And I'm not showing it here, there is actually a file called PLC. /genie/plc.py is just the main program, and you give it the option, I want to start an aggregate and a registry, or I want to start just a registry, or I want to start a slice manager. You say, which one of this combination I want to start? I'll show you other configurations, but this is the standard configuration. The slice manager exports over the slice interface, and it turns right around and calls the only aggregate it knows about. In other configurations, it will know about other aggregates, called the local one. And the registry independently starts up. Both of these depend on the PLC API. And you start up a node, and it's basic existing piece of software with the node manager, and you start the component exporting the slice interface as well. Two caveats and then one giant point to make. Git ticket, that particular call is implemented here only. That's get the ticket so I can go redeem it. Redeem ticket is implemented here only. This gives you the ability to go to the aggregate and say, give me a ticket for some of your nodes. This is back to your question. This was modeled on what we do today. The aggregate will give you a ticket for the nodes, and then you can go to all the components and redeem the ticket. This is the interface. This is now the Genie version of the interface that we currently get in the lab, but we give it to it in kind of a half-done way. Slice Manager does not give you tickets. It is a convenience for users. Users are always free to talk to aggregates directly, and if they want to get tickets to make their life more complicated, that's their prerogative. If they want to just say create a slice, they would probably go to a Slice Manager and let it worry about everything else. Components, the flip side is, components do not respond to get ticket. They've already, in the PlanLab implementation, turned over control of their resources to PLC. And so if you say, give me a ticket, they say, I don't have anything to give you. I've given all my resources to PLC to hand out. All right, so that's the caveat. The other big point to make is operation and maintenance is a sub-piece of this, and this is absolutely not the scale. If you look at the width of this interface, the majority of the calls currently in here are O&M calls that the PlanLab support team take advantage of that are never exposed through any of this. And that's important because if what you did as your implementation strategy is say, I will take this because two slides ago I saw it was built on a class hierarchy that makes sense to me, but I'm going to take out the PlanLab backend and substitute my own, that's a perfectly valid thing to do. What you will have lost is O&M, which may be of absolutely no value to you because you already have your own. But if what you had was a set of nodes that looked anything like general purpose processors and they were at all planet lavish, then this is the piece you would be giving up if you just took this. I just wanted to make that point. And that's this arrow here. There is control going on. O&M reboot and all kinds of stuff. Get the right code on there. All kinds of stuff going on. This is probably quite a bit thicker too. If it were drawn to scale. Again, I'm not showing the client, but the client that I'll demo in a minute comes in and basically establishes two connections, one to the slice manager or anytime it wants to do a call that's related to the slice interface, and once in the registry for any calls it wants to make on the registry interface.
I just want to clarify what you said at the beginning of the slide, which is that you can go to the aggregate manager and say get ticket and then redeem the ticket at the complaint manager. But if you go to the slice manager and you say set up a slice, does that then do exactly that exchange? It goes to the aggregate manager, gets a ticket, and then goes to the component manager and redeems it? Or is there, or does the slice manager set up a slice without using tickets at all?
The implementation sets up the slice without using tickets. It takes advantage of the fact that this will create the slice for you, and it'll just go ahead and do the simple thing.
Is that part of the SFA? Or is that just...
It's part of the SFA. It is one... There is a create... Well, we alternate between call it create slice and instantiate slice, but if you'll forgive that. There is a create slice call, which is functionally equivalent to get ticket, redeem ticket. The implementation doesn't actually take the two steps. It's direct. It understands. You give it an RSpec and it sets up the slice.
So, how does the component manager know that the slice exists if you haven't redeemed a ticket on it? Is that part of the SFA?
No. Well, it's consistent with the SFA. It doesn't exploit every opportunity the SFA allows. I will argue that,
Component.
Right? What's that?
You're putting state in the node, say there's a slice on you now, but you're not doing it using one of the Genie wrapper interfaces.
That's right.
Okay, so
and that's
outside of the SFA.
It is a back channel.
Okay.
It is absolutely back channel, and it is. Well,
that's fine. I just want to make sure I wasn't missing.
No, you're not missing anything. It's based on many painful years of experience as to where the authoritative state should live, and our conclusion is that it needed to live here, and this was merely a cache. And I don't see a compelling reason in the near term, or I don't see a compelling reason to get rid of this back channel and to have this aggregate manager talk to the set of component managers to get that work done.
So when it's a GPNE node and not a Planet Lab node, the authoritative state still don't live in the...
If the GPNE node had a MyPLC where all the nodes ran the node manager, it would also use the back channel. So this is the difference between using MyPLC and merely taking this piece of code and subtracting the back tiny bit of it and substituting your local thing. Got it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the two choices that I see. And my understanding, although now what you said kind of made me doubt a little bit, is that most of the groups who are taking MyPLC, their nodes would therefore run a node manager, and therefore all the O&M and the back channel create slices as well, lumped together, was going to be part of the system.
Well, if you call create slice on the aggregate manager, this stuff happens, right? If you call create slice on the slice manager, does it in effect call the aggregate manager, or does it go?
No, it calls the aggregate manager.
Okay.
In this picture, it only knew of one, but in the next picture, it'll know of more.
So it would go off to another aggregate manager.
Yeah.
That's fine. I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
And is it possible in theory for a user to talk to the aggregate manager directly?
Yes.
Or do they have to go through?
Yeah, I didn't really show it here, but all of these interfaces are exposed.
Okay.
So even some users might choose to use a client program that comes in through here. At the same time, Emulab could come in directly to the aggregate.
And this is all SFA APIs, not other.
Yeah, this is just the slice that interfaces with. Right, exactly. Right. Fully compliant.
And if the authoritative state is in PLC, right, then it seems like anyone using the component manager has sort of different semantics for what they can expect in the case of failure. Is that right? And we haven't really defined what people should expect in the case of failure, right?
But that's right. So if you create a slice through here,
yeah.
That will affect a permanent stay here.
Right.
And if any one of these nodes go down and come back up, it will be brought back up in sync. And you don't have to worry about going back and re-invoking create slice later if somebody failed.
Right.
If you get a ticket back from the aggregate and then you go cash it in here, that is not hold. It is your responsibility to go back and make sure all your components are still.
And
you know that.
And should I think of this as a... should I think of the additional robustness as a function of the aggregate manager or of the slice manager?
That additional robustness is part of the... I would think of it as part of the aggregate manager. Because you can get to the aggregate. My slice manager is going to exploit the fact for the time being that it only knows about aggregates that happen to be aggregates of PLC. I hadn't thought of that before, but that does have implications on anyone that wants my slice manager to know about them that doesn't have PLC API behind it, which we've just been talking about.
Yeah, right. So we can think of, if slivers disappear, right, whether it's the slice manager's job or failed instantiate, it's the slice manager's job to go around and make sure that they come back up or
that's right. The
aggregate manager. At least in some cases, if somebody's providing you with a 1,000 processors and there's failover, they may not want to reveal that. Right. The details of that.
I think if you did come into the aggregate and say instantiate at the aggregate level,
It's
reasonable that the aggregate is responsible for the permanence of that.
Yeah, and this is the way we treat it too, by the way. So.
Okay. So what we have in mind is a staged rollout of this. What I'm going to show you in the demo is only this. What we are hoping to do in the next couple of weeks is to have a second and third PLC that on which we start only the aggregate. And one will be Vinny and the other will be Measurement Lab. And they run all the back-end stuff, so nothing else has changed there. And I don't have a slide of this, so let me just draw the picture. At PLC, I have a slice manager. It knows about the local aggregate manager. And it knows about the aggregate manager over here. And it knows about the aggregate manager over here. And this is Vinny. And this is Vinlab. And so when you come in as a user and say to the slice manager, tell me about what you got, you're getting an answer that spans all of these. And the reason that worked is that the slice manager asked each one of them, what nodes do you have? And it aggregated that together and it said the answer. After when the user came in and said, here's an RSpec, I want to create a slice, that RSpec will have been rich enough for the slice manager to know, okay, go do this at this place, this here, and this here. We are adding a function that's not in the SFA. And I think this is the hook for a whole lot of work in the future. But we've added a call to the aggregate that the slice manager will need to call called get policy. And this is a way for the aggregate to express to the slice manager on whose behalf it is and is not willing to create slices. And ultimately, how many resources they're willing to give those slices, but we don't have the resources now. So today, this is a whitelist or a blacklist. And so on MLAB, for example, which is only going to hand out slices to a very select set of users, there's a configuration file here that's the policy config that says whitelist X, Y, and Z. And so when you ask that question, Slice Manager will get back that answer, and it will apply that filter, if you will, to any answer it sends up. And it will filter out and spit. We wouldn't have to do this because if you came back in and said, I want a slice that's over here and the policy was no, it would have failed. But this is so that the slice manager reports a realistic answer.
So do you mind if I describe an alternative approach? Yeah. So we looked at this and we said, whitelists and blacklists will get huge, right?
Potentially.
And trying to come up with, and policies are much more complicated than just, I mean, so clearly whitelists and blacklists are useful policies, right? But this is like one little tiny piece of potential policy.
Right. This is so we can bring up GitLab and Vinny tomorrow.
Right.
This is by no means the answer.
So the approach that we are taking is that requests that say, you know, tell me what's available are made in the context of a user and or a slice. Right? So that each aggregate manager has a chance to decide, however, you know, basically, you know, what am I willing to give this guy, right? And then return some kind of availability, you know, some kind of limited RSpec that simply speaks to availability.
Yeah,
right?
That means the questions have to go all the way up to the
end. We consider that as well, and it may be the right answer. Basically, the call that comes down here that says, tell me what nodes you have, or, you know, tell me your resources.
Right.
Could have been parameterized by what Slice was asking.
Right.
And then the policy is entirely here. That's perfect. The reason we didn't do that is that we thought it was important to have a cache here and to be able to give back a rapid answer for the common case without going and doing that.
So what we're doing here is that there's actually two requests here. There's give me an RSpec that tells me everything you've got, right? And then there's the give me an RSpec that tells me what's available or what I can get, right? So the big thing that describes, you know, all 500 nodes that you have and whatever, right, can be cached easily, right? And then the relatively lightweight communication and test of checking what is available, right, is the only thing that has to be done on a more frequent basis.
I'm not sure what this. Okay, I mean, your idea probably is the right one. We wanted to get to. I think I have another part of the argument here, which was we wanted to be able to accumulate policies, which now would eventually be much richer than whitelists.
Yeah.
So that we didn't have to pairwise peer. That I could start aggregating, I could start advertising, basically in sort of the transitive closure of everyone's who I peer with. So it will turn out that when I get to peering with Europe in a minute, they're going to have other networks that I will not directly peer with. So we needed to collect together, this is part of the argument I can't really argue it more strenuously, that we are going to get to the point that we want to collect policies together to decide the right thing.
Before leaving, so in this scheme, the node should be, even a Vini node or an MLab node, should be running a node manager which is compatible with Planet Lab.
Yes, yes.
Central.
Yeah, so
and this is a
Vini node, it's running whatever the Vini kernel is. Yeah. So this is the model that I assumed most people were going towards.
Well, as long as we have Planet Lab nodes or Vini nodes, but then we have also optical nodes, so we cannot do for that.
So the optical nodes are...
So we were trying to use
that's a good discussion point, and this is not going to offer you any help for that. This aggregate manager, I think, is ultimately going to look into an RSpec and say, okay, this part of the RSpec I understand how to deal with. I set some attributes and I call PLC. These other ones, I have magic powers and I know how to go deal with setting up the optical circuits. So I think you do have to get into that. Mm-hmm. With you, I'm not so sure because I think you might be enough Planet Lab like.
Yeah, we expect we'll find some little things down there.
Right, so an aggregate. So the aggregate pulls apart the RSpec. And if there's stuff in the RSpec that controls an optical switch, mm-hmm. there's no way to get that out to where it needs to be through this channel. You're going to have a start gluing that stuff on here.
Right, and maybe Manfred will do that.
Right,
the same.
That's correct. Yes, well, we had planned to use the Planet Lab API to handle compute resources, to be able to slice PC. For the network resources, we plan to use our own software and somehow link that into the aggregate.
Yeah, I total. brain freeze on the hot card. Vinny's got to do the same thing.
Right.
And the only question is, can you bury that in here? Does it get bolted onto here, or does it get bolted onto here?
Mm-hmm. So what are sort of
is you can allocate processors and network processors and configure your backplane. You've got the same problem.
Well, and yeah, I guess it's unclear to me at this point how much of it goes into the RSpec and how much of it is defined by the user when they log into their slice.
That is the second fundamental issue, which is what do you say in the RSpec at setup time, and then what is programmed by the user by making calls to the local OS.
Right.
So we have,
and that which is privileged, our argument has been, is part of the RSpec, and part of what you do is you set up the privileges so that the user can come in and issue the right system calls.
So this is a little bit later, but I mean, we've been struggling with this whole, essentially, like this get policy question, which is that the resource is very, very hard to divide when it's essentially all possible header formats that one might find on the network, and they don't naturally and easily divide. And it's very hard to express what we have and what we don't have. And so we're hitting back against this right now and trying to figure out what we do, because we realize this is just going to mushroom out of real capital. This is going to mushroom.
Right, so what you...
I mean, we maintain this as a separate discussion. As in,
but if I, let me see if I understand that issue. If you had only one control user, then can issue the appropriate calls to say, I now want to catch these packets and do this with them.
Right.
How do you partition the space of packets you can catch so that I can control the ones I want to catch, and you can control the ones you want to catch. Right, that is the slicing of this capability issue.
They very naturally overlap in all sorts of parameters.
Yeah, yeah.
And want them to. I mean, it's very useful if they do. And so expressing all of what we have available is...
It seems like the problem is worse than firewall configuration.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Which isn't easily shared.
Right.
Yeah, this is, that is a very hard problem. Fine, I think nearly my last slide. Then we will have some full-fledged peers that get configured up just like PLC does. And our first two candidates are in Europe and Japan, although I think we will be doing South Korea and Brazil pretty soon. And so they bring up something that looks just the same. We understand that we're about to hit a bunch of issues. One of the issues, which I don't actually outline them here, is the richness of the peering policy. The second issue is the structure of the peering relationships. And the way it's going to look initially is everyone's slice manager is going to point to everybody else's aggregates. They will have their own slice manager. We could get by with one slice manager, but this would mean all worldwide you came in through the same interface, and we want everyone to be autonomous. So the Japanese will come in through their interface, and the Europeans will come in through their interface, and each of them will then go peer with everybody else's aggregates. Obviously, that's not going to scale. It's going to get worse then because, do they have to peer with Vinny directly in MLAB, or can they merely peer with Planet Lab, who peers with Vinny in MLAB? And I think the way this, and now that the picture gets messy, and you can probably anticipate.
Oh, that sounds very scary.
The other picture about the drones and
transiting.
Who's responsible? And this is the open question. We can continue to do end by end, but I think what's going to happen is that PLC's slice manager will end up pairing with PLE's slice manager, which pairs with a set of aggregates, and vice versa.
So there is a hierarchical scheme.
It'll be not unlike the tier one backbones, all knowing about each other.
This is very much our view of things.
And then likewise, then we've got to get the Japanese and the South Koreans to coalesce in the final Asia. But that was easier in Europe. So this will happen and then like that.
Where's Vinny?
Vinny is one of these. So this will be Planet Lab US, if you will. This will be Vinny. This will be InLab. And then this will be the Planet Lab Europe. knows, and this will be GLAB and whatever else.
And how visible is this to a researcher? If somebody over at Planet Lab Europe wants to use something in Planet, wants to use resources on Planet Lab.
I mean, it will get embedded in the RSpec because it will be a nesting of networks, and I don't know exactly how that. I don't know how that will play out. We've not crossed the bridge yet.
So I believe, you know, my take on the programmatic level is there has to be some visibility because the national laws are actually different, and as a researcher, you must be aware that you have to comply.
We've actually included country in our RSpec for exactly that reason.
And then in terms of registries, what we're really building up here is a hierarchy of registry servers. So the one we're running here is the root, and then it's pointing, that's definitely a pointing down at the other ones. All right, so.
How are you doing on time?
I think I'm okay, but I do need to move on. So I got till 10:30, but yes, right. So now we're to the demo, and I just wanted to say SFI, it runs on your laptop or wherever. It's a client of the registry and slice manager right now, you'll see. It automatically acquires and manages credentials, so you never have to say the word credential. All you have to do to bootstrap it is to put your private key in a particular directory. There will be helper functions that help you edit some of the nasty data structures that you get back. And otherwise, you could just say, stick it in a file and never look at it again. And so the structure of this is it's SFI command and then some options and arguments. So I can list all type user in this authority. I can show a particular record, this particular record. And by the way, let me save its output into this file. And that will now be my record. I can update an entry in a registry given one of these records. That's just a file. I can ask about the set of nodes available. So these happen to be calls on the registry server. The rest of these calls are on the aggregate, or on the slice manager, which calls the aggregate today. I can ask what nodes it has, and I can specify the format for the output, and I can save the answer, which really came over as this giant XML thing in an RSpec file. And the reason I want to do that is I can ask for the default RSpec. Maybe I edit it with a little editor helper, but I can turn right. So once I edit it, I've produced a request RSpec. I saved it in another file, and I turned right around and called create with that as input. I can ask what I actually got, what resources this slice got. I can save the answer away. And then I can control the slice. Oops, typo. That's a dot test. Okay. And now, our fingers are firmly crossed. In terms of its conventions for transforming a Planet Lab database entry into one here, so I'm not totally happy with all of these, but basically I am now in a .sfi directory in my home directory where my credentials are going to accumulate, and I've already done some commands, so they've accumulated, and I'm not going to tempt fate and try to start from ground zero. But
this is on your local machine?
This is on this laptop. So I've got a slice credential for a slice called TMAC. I've got my own personal Larry Peterson credential, which is what I use to edit and update my registry entry. So those are the two credentials I have today. So if I SFI list, basically, I can list everything in the Princeton domain or authority.
This is listing only components or only?
No, this is listing everything. Okay, Tony.
Do you need the .edu there?
No, this is the name of an authority.
Oh, okay.
So it's an HRN. Ah, good, there they are. and it's telling me, and this particular one had no, oops. This particular one is telling me the type of each one, which is type user. Most of these here, I don't, right?
Does it go down to lower levels?
No, this is just at that. This is an LS. This is an LS. I'm in a directory, I'm doing an LS.
And is this, so this is an LS of the people in the Princeton Slice, people who are registered with the Princeton Slice Authority?
Yes. Yep. Okay. So I've got another, oops.
Wouldn't an aggregate in the Princeton Slice Authority also show up?
There are no other, I'm sorry.
You don't have any stuff that's in PyLabVS Princeton?
This particular, the way that, I'm sorry. I am not running against the live database. I'm running, I'm not running against the live system. I'm running against a shadow of it. And there, it's been truncated in a number of ways. Let's leave it at that. So let me show you another one that's got a little bit more interesting stuff in it. PL is an authority that is for the PlanLab staff. There is a corresponding PL. PI, if you will, or site in PlanLab. So here you'll see some users and some slices. So I could have said SFI list dash lockups T slice. All right, so I'm doing an LS. And then I can do a, let me do a show of my particular record. And this is just the convention for having generated my HRN. I want to take my prefix before the at sign off of my email address. So this isn't clean, but it's everything known about me. My record, my UID, my GID is in there, or information from it, my phone number, and so on. So what I can do is give an option here, which is I want to save this in llp.record. Okay, so it's saved it. Yeah. So you see it's saved. It happened to save it in my .sfi directory. So it's a big pile of ugly XML, which now, at this point, the tool, a helper tool, should help you, but I'm just going to do this in Emacs. Got the key in there somewhere in here. Some keys. Ah, there's my phone number. That's my cell phone. Let me change it to my office phone. So this strategy of saving ugly gunk in files in your grading tool, this is the state that you used to go to PLC and manipulate there. What we're doing is we're bringing that back to your desktop along with everything about you and edit it to your heart's content there and then just save it. So now if I get back to here, I can run the update command. Yeah, I'm in an absolute name right now, that's a mistake. Yeah. Did I get that right? I think so. So let's see if it got the new phone number. All of this just to change a phone number. Yeah, so you see.
And the the model of who is allowed to update this stuff?
I am, because I have my user credential and the authority that allowed me to be in this, vouched for me.
And so if there was, so if you were maintaining records for other people at Princeton or something, right, what?
As the PI in Princeton, yeah. I can edit my users, yeah.
And that's because of a bit that is set in the database over on,
that's because of the credentials I would have gotten.
Got it.
The policy that issued the credential. But you'll never see me issue a git credential problem. So there's a model for what credential you need for certain activity built into the program.
Got it.
Okay, so what do I want to do? Let's just do a command on the nodes. The node command, we call it nodes, it should have been, you might have wanted something else, but this is part of lots of their nodes. And I'm going to say what I want back is a bunch of DNS names.
Is it filter?
It's a format, yeah. So what's really coming back is a giant RSpec. And I, for the purpose of display here, I just want to see what the DNS names are. I'll explain. So those are all the machines available to you on PlanetLab. Long list of, right. I could have asked for IP address. What I want to do is use this, oh, by the way, let me run another command. This is not an SFI command. This is just another command I happen to have. You'll see it give me back a set of nodes, DNS names. What that one is a curl of a call on, I'm just grabbing something from summer.cs.princeton.edu. And there's basically a query embedded here. This is a call on Comon. Mm. And I said, tell me what nodes are good. So this gets back to your question.
Yeah.
So now I've got a bunch of DNS names that are good. Now imagine building scripts to pull things together and do stuff for you. If I did SFI nodes, and just for brands, I'll use the IP format. But let me save the output in default.rspec. It'll display the IP addresses of all those machines, but it has saved a giant ugly RSpec file. And now you can imagine going into that giant RSpec file with the appropriate tool, Lungers, and saying, where the fault told you everything, I want this subset stuff in. And I could have done a query on Comon and whatever parameters I had. And, you don't want to see this, but I need a nice parse XML display. There's some ugliness there. Okay, another thing I can do is I can ask a slice manager, what slices do you know about? And this is the place where this is not the full database. This particular database was just populated with a few slices. So those are the only slices that are known right now. And I can ask what resources were actually assigned to planetlab.us.pl.tmac. I could save this to a file. I could filter it so you don't see the ugliness, but I'll just print the ugliness here.
So
this is returning the RSpec that was actually assigned to that slice.
And so I assume it's contacting the aggregate manager to find this out? Or
everything's the slice manager, which in this particular case just calls the one aggregate.
So would something, If I had gone and used the component managers on individual components to get slivers, would they show up on this list?
I am not sure. So the slice, to get the ticket, the aggregate would have known about the slice. So it would have shown up, yeah.
So that's okay. So, but so that, but that's the kind of, so that's kind of an artifact of the fact that I could only get tickets from the aggregator.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. So I have a default RSpec. So we're going
to
do one.
Just quickly, what would it take for one of us to set this up on our own laptop? I mean, in terms of creating credentials, and I mean, what would we have to have on the back end?
So what's on the back end now is a MyPLC. Okay. Is a PLC. And then on that machine, we first imported the PLC database into the Genie wrapper form, and that you do, you know, once. You're supposed to only do it once. You can recover, but you do that once, and then you start up the aggregate server, the slice server, and so on. And that's what this is talking to. And then, I mean, what I'm running here is just a Python program that is part of the Genie wrapper, and so it's making calls on all those classes I showed you before.
So how do the, when you generate the credentials, I noticed you have some certificate chaining in there, and who you know, if I was to generate a certificate with OpenSSL or something, how do I sign it?
SFI is tailored today. It's tailored today for the average researcher.
Okay.
Which means it's not quite everything you need as a PI.
I see. Okay.
So you would make direct, you'd use one of these other little tools that we have that on a little interpreter on the client side that made the direct calls to get credentials and so on, so you'd have to know what you were doing.
Yeah, okay.
But you basically, the way this bootstraps is that I already happen to have a public key loaded in the PyLab database. And so when this import function ran, it got loaded into the Genie database. And to bootstrap this, all I had to do was put my private key in the .sfi directory. And the very first time I tried to do something, it realized I didn't have the credentials I needed, and it went through the credential bootstrapping process, which creates a bootstrap credential from your using your private key. And then check the public key.
Okay. Yeah, some document, you know, the installation documentation on how to put this into a MyPLC environment would be really helpful.
Absolutely.
We'd like to give it a try.
It's called email. I'm going to do one last operation, and it will either work or it will crash, and then we'll be done. Which is create. We're going to create a slice. This is going to work. Try to decide if I want to do it in Princeton. Dot LLP will be the name of my slice. Oh crap, just a second. I'll just use the default RSpec. Let me try one thing. There was another place where these got flipped. Ah. No, that's not it, because it would have completed the different line.
There was actually an update from the SVN log to SFI about a couple hours ago.
I'm sorry?
I'm not sure what version you're running, but there was an update to SFI and SVN a couple hours ago.
I think I got that one.
Okay.
Let me try. Let me try this. Because there was a point where these got flipped on something else. Of course, there's no way to verify whether this actually created the slice. Yeah, okay, so it's something here's not working. So I think there's probably time to stop. Okay, so other questions. There's a lot of fragileness here. You make a mistake and things, you know, it's not robust, things crash, but that's where we are. And our plan is to try to get Vinny up first, and then MLAB, and then PlanLab Europe, and PlanLab Japan.
So when we spoke on the phone, you walked through some of the Genie wrapper codes and pointed out, you know, where you would pick it up if you were going to implement your own aggregate manager. know, I don't think we really have time to do that with any kind of thoroughness, but it might be useful to just take one example.
Well, so, I mean, you just, it's not a huge amount of code. So if you go into, first, everything is in trunk. What we, so this is code that's being edited on a minute-by-minute basis. As soon as we have something stable, we'll tag it, and then that will be something that you can more safely work with. If you work with what's in trunk today, you're at the head of the tree, and bad things will happen to you. But if you go to the command line, that's where you'll find SFI, the SFI command. And just seeing from there, what you know, following that is probably a good thing to look at. The other thing to look at is slice genie, and you'll see plc.py, which is just a main program that, depending on command line options, starts up aggregate, slice manager, and registry.
This is the stuff that's going to run on your MyPLC.
Those are what are. So, right, so these are the two commands you, right, you on the PLC box, you change directory to genie,
right.
And you invoke plc.py.
Okay.
And then and with the options, the right thing will start. Or on your laptop, you change, you go to that directory. You tell, this is where you find all the security stuff and the RPC stuff. And then component is where you find the thing that you would start on each node. But that's actually less vital right now. If what you're doing is creating slices through the aggregate, then the fact that the slice interface is exported on the component is less vital. So it just is. So I would put that last. And I mean, that didn't really say an awful lot, but so if you want the threads to get a hold of, follow the code path. Mm-hmm. It's these two.
Right. So if you're going to modify the aggregate manager, so rather than start a node manager or communicate with a node manager, but it actually calls internal calls to say configure your optical switch.
Yeah.
You go to aggregate PI and you start working.
Yeah. So what you'll see, The setting we were talking about a minute ago, which was a... So to get in here and to throw away the Planet Lab specific stuff entirely, mm-hmm. You're not left with very much, just a dispatch to a routine.
Well, could you bring it up and just, you know, just look at it?
Oh, sure. There's the aggregate, it's a specialization of the Genie server. There's its init function. It needs to connect to the registry, it needs to connect to PLC. I don't remember why it needs to connect to the registry. It needs to load its credentials in.
The five slices?
I've done a real close inspection of everything that's going on in here. So there's a bunch of stuff in here, yeah, that's pawing through the PlanLab database information. Right, so now we're getting, I thought there was a place that all the dispatch functions were filled out, but I can't find it. Maybe it's at the bottom. But now we're getting into the
562.
Oh, by the way, when you go looking through this, the ticket code, because we were not using it in this demo, and we did some code reorganization, temporarily was without a home. And I forget now where Tony stuck it, just so we would not lose it. But the problem is we have carved aggregates apart from registries, and sometimes we've forced splits that were not entirely mean, aesthetically, it was the right thing to do, but there was an intricate connection between an aggregate that wants to create a ticket and the information it knows out of the register. And so when Scott Baker originally implemented this, he had a Git ticket. He thought of it as like a Git credential, and it was part of the registry function or class. Whereas it really is part of the aggregate. And so we can move it to the aggregate, except that it had too many dependencies on the registry.
It looks like it was the previous page that had the...
If you're looking for the register, it's on 516.
I'm sorry?
516.
Ah, there's the register. And it's registered these functions above it, and all they did was you'll see called the decode authentication routine, which is a function provided by the Genie server that checks your credentials against the rights. And then this matches to self.startSlice or whatever.
Right, but it's the several pages above that is the code that needs to be modified.
Well, arguably, you could take everything from the top down to here. Actually, keep this. If you wanted to start afresh with the aggregate and do your own aggregate thing and just use the RPC machinery under it, pretty much everything above here you would throw away. I'd have to go back to look to be sure there wasn't something useful, but that's primarily Platlab specific stuff. Mm-hmm. Just to get to the dispatch point, purely use the underlying RPC security mechanisms. You would keep this, and then you would have to go off and build a function called get nodes and a function called get slices. So what we should do is create a skeleton aggregate.py that was purely start here, and I would look at what's above and make sure there was nothing there that was useful. Start here to create your own aggregate that knows nothing about PyLab.
I think that'd be really useful.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
Because, you know, for those who aren't that familiar with PlanetLab, when you rip out all that stuff and it fails in a way that you can't
really grab the nodes,
do one line at a time.
So I think the init function we'd have to clean up the init function because it's grabbing all the necessary keys and...
I think that there's not time to really
get
this in more detail now.
But that's what we'll do that.
Be willing to
Yeah, that's a good thing. Good idea.
Let's take a 10-minute bio break.
Okay.
And start up again at 10:35. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ah, it's worth 90%.
Thank you.